Hi, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I am Mike Spofford, joined, as always, by my trusted colleague, Weston Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And, Wes, it is Tuesday. Draft day is Thursday, a little more than 48 hours away. The Chicago Caleb's will be on the clock to select their new quarterback. Lots to get to today, and kind of our draft preview. We're going to talk. I'm going to throw some questions at you, talk some different scenarios, but a couple things I want to touch on first. One is that one of our topics on the last show was how Brian Gutekunst makes various off-season moves and signings so that he doesn't box himself into a corner in terms of glaring needs in the draft. And not long after we turned the cameras off last Thursday, an offensive tackle named Andre Dillard signed on the dotted line for the Packers, a former first-round pick. Packers are going to give, this will be his third NFL team. He was with the Eagles, then started a bunch of games with the Titans last year. Now he's in Green Bay with another shot, in a sense, to kind of try to revive his career a little bit. No guarantees that that a player like this is going to make the roster, but just another example of how Brian Gutekunst goes about things in the offseason to build the most well-rounded depth that he can so that he's not forced into doing anything during the 3 days of the draft.
A win-win for both sides. Now, I don't know the parameters of the contract, but to bring you up to speed a little bit on Dillard, he was a former first-round pick with the Philadelphia Eagles. They loved his athleticism. That's the way Philadelphia likes to build out their line. Well, as it turned out, he had some injury things. They had some other stuff happen on the offensive line that he never really got a shot in Philly. So what that led to was Tennessee really rolling the dice last year on him as an unrestricted free agent, gave him a three-year, $23 million contract, and it didn't go very well for him last season. But I think when you look at where he's at in his career, I don't really know if he's ever had the chance yet to be the player that everybody thought he could be coming out of Washington State in 2019. And the reason I say that is, you look at the way Green Bay builds offensive linemen. Yes, athleticism definitely matters. Look at what happened a couple years ago with Sean Ryan and Zach Tom. Those guys shot through the roof, testing-wise, at the NFL Scouting Combine.
That's right.
Dillard was had an incredible run at the Combine in 2019. It's what made him a first-round pick. The Packers have done so well developing the raw attributes of players. And when you have somebody that was as talented as Dillard, I want to see him get a shot in Green Bay. So from Green Bay's perspective, they needed to add another body to that room. They lost three so far this offseason, guys that played many snaps for them over the last 5 years. So they had to make a response. They had to have an answer for Dillard. This is an opportunity to compete at a position that's going to be completely wide open.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a tremendous opportunity for a guy like Dillard to get a reset and a fresh start, and we'll see what happens there. One other thing to ask you about quickly before I start tossing some questions at you. We heard from General Manager Brian Gutekunst on Monday. He spoke with the media, the annual pre-draft news conference. Just your initial thoughts, reactions, anything that you heard in that roughly 35 minutes that he was answering questions that stood out to you.
34:04 on my recorder, Michael.
Okay, 34 minutes and change.
Maybe you started earlier than I did. But no, I actually thought it was a very enlightening overall press conference. I thought he touched on a lot of things. Again, he's not going to sit there and give you the draft board and what they're thinking going into this thing.
Yeah, it's not a PowerPoint presentation to the media. Oh, here's our draft board so you know exactly what we're going to do.
I understand why you can't even do that afterwards, because there's certain things you don't want to give away, but man, that'd be fun. On the week after the draft, be like, okay, so this is what we're doing. By the way, I'll answer this question, but did you see what the Arizona Cardinals did, that they put out the video they put out, I think, last night?
No.
Fascinating video with their GM, which they filmed him the entire time while he was negotiating the trade at number 3, and then when they were trying to move back up. It was almost like
You're talking this is last year. Last year's draft.
It's like a higher stakes version of what Brian did in 18, where he moved back and then he had to go back up to get Jair.
To get Jair, yeah.
But it was really interesting. I mean, the guy's working the phones. He's talking to multiple teams. If you have a chance, check it out. The Cardinals, I believe, put it out on their Instagram and on their Twitter page. It's a fascinating look into just how hectic that is while the clock is ticking on their pick. But that being said, from Brian being able to discuss with us sort of his insight, you always gain more about what's happened in the past than what's going to happen in this draft. And I thought he did an excellent job at, one, explaining the success that Green Bay's had the last 3 years with these drafts, how a lot of these draft picks they've had has tied into that. They've picked 24 times the last 2 years. They're going to pick 11 more times as it stands right now going into Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Brian did say he'd be happy to add more picks to that, though, if that's how it would work out. But the other thing I thought was cool was him explaining his rationale in the second round. Because about a week ago, Mike, I brought this to you while I was working on Insider Inbox. The Packers traded back from 45 to 50. And by doing that last year.
And it was
two trades.
Two trades to go back five spots in the second round last year.
They gained the fifth round pick that eventually became Dontavian Wicks. And they gained the sixth round pick that eventually became Carl Brooks. And by doing that, they got Jaden Reed. What was the most illuminating to me, because this reminds you, and it's something you were touching on with Gutekunst too, what the Packers draft board looks like is not what ESPN.com's draft board looks like.
Right.
He mentioned that, yeah, we took a risk that we might not get Jaden Reed. There's going to be five players you're not going to get that you probably had on your board at that point in the race. But they like Tucker Kraft. They didn't have Tucker Kraft rated that differently from Luke Musgrave. So if Jaden Reed isn't there, they would have been feeling fine with taking Tucker Kraft where they did. Instead, he ends up being there in the third round,
yeah.
And the rest is history. That's the type of stuff that happens every single year. It's very rarely discussed, but you know, especially as you get farther into this draft, there's going to be guys that certain teams have at ranked 100, and there's going to be guys that are at 200 for them.
Yeah,
it all depends on the way things scout. I just felt like for the 30 minutes that Brian talked, we gained a lot of clarity into what his process is like, and obviously these big decisions that are going to be made in a couple days.
Yeah, that's one thing I've learned over the years, and it's hard for me to understand sometimes exactly what a draft board looks like when somebody trades back, say in Brian's first draft when he traded back a whole bunch of spots, but then of course his plan all along was to move back up to take Jaire Alexander. But I've learned that when somebody just trades back a few spots, you know, whether it's three or five, maybe even six or seven spots, it's because they have a handful of guys rated almost equally on their board, and they would be happy taking any of them. So rather than just, you know, roll the dice and pick one guy because a certain number gets rolled, they're like, hey, if we can pick up a pick later in the draft, move back, and we know that one of these guys that we have rated equally is still going to be there, you know, boom, there it is. Now, the follow-up question that, of course, Brian's not going to answer to your scenario last year is, okay, so you had Jaden Reed, you had Tucker Kraft. Was there anybody else that was sort of on that same line that you would have been comfortable taking after you traded back a couple times? But that's kind of how this thing works. And you're exactly right. As much as whether you're watching NFL Network or watching ESPN and you've got, you know, Mel Kiper's best available and you've got, you know, whoever does it now, Daniel Jeremiah, I guess, is one of the main guys on NFL Network. Daniel Jeremiah's best available. That's not what there are 32 teams in this league and there are 32 different draft boards. They've all done their own evaluations. They have their own opinions. They have their own roster needs, and teams work need into the equation of their evaluation at different levels. You know, some, you know, weight that even more, some don't weight it as much. So, everybody's board is an individual thing, and that's what's so fascinating about how this unfolds. So that leads me to my first question I want to ask you, since we're talking about trades and kind of how that works. Gutekunst is going into this draft with 11 picks. How many picks ultimately over the course of the 3 days do you think he's going to make?
How many picks the Packers will make? They will make a dozen picks. They will have 12 picks when it's all said and done. I don't see Green Bay moving down from 11. That doesn't say they couldn't trade up at some point, but I feel like the 11 is going to be locked in, and it's going to be about how much do they add on the back end of it, because here's the main reason for that. The five in the top five, I think it was you that pointed it out, but somebody mentioned it, I think, with the press conference. With those picks and the value of those picks, you can use them to move up, maybe even in the first round.
Certainly.
But by doing that, then you're then foregoing a pick that Brian Gutekunst himself said is very difficult to obtain.
Yeah.
Teams don't want to give up top 100 picks. They just don't. It's too good of a lottery ticket. you don't know what kind of player you're going to get out of that. And as I've talked about ad nauseum now in inbox, it's those picks in the second, third, fourth, and sometimes fifth round that end up building championship teams, because you're only going to get that one first rounder. You're going to get a couple extra swings after that. Can you make them count? I think the Packers take 12 players. I feel like one thing that has definitely changed in the Gutekunst era from the Ted Thompson era is Ted, for a time there, was just kind of giving away those seventh rounders. Not giving away, but he was just throwing them into trades. I remember he did a couple with the New England Patriots. It's just like, okay, take a seventh rounder. Everybody gets a seventh rounder. And I think part of that was he wanted to get started on undrafted free agency. He wanted to get the college thing figured out. But Brian has taken an opposite approach. He likes taking those seventh round picks. He likes building those up. Last year they took, what, three or four? That's a valuable commodity too. And I don't think necessarily you're going to see as many of those throw-in trades as you did in the past.
I think, and I wonder, and this would be maybe a question to ask Brian at some point. I wonder if just if the whole the college free agency thing has just gotten that much more competitive
maybe,
in recent years, to where those seventh round picks are a little bit more valuable because you can get a guy that maybe you were planning to sign as an undrafted rookie, but now you don't have to compete with anybody for him.
Yep.
It's like you just use that seventh round pick to get him. So teams aren't necessarily as willing to just to toss those around.
I just wonder.
That's speculation.
I'll keep using the Anthony Johnson Jr. topic last year. I was one of two people. I think it was me and Jason Wilde were the only one on his conference call last year. And he mentioned, because there was just so much chaos happening with the guys and picks and conference calls.
Yeah, 4 7th round picks last year for...
And Johnson Jr. said, he's like, no, I was signed up with somebody already. I would already basically agreed to a college free agency deal with another team.
Yeah.
And then the Green Bay Packers came swooping in. They said, we're taking this guy. And then lo and behold, he's a player that ends up playing 300 plus defensive snaps, has 4 spot starts, and now is actually in that conversation to start alongside Xavier McKinney. So those are valuable things to have in your back pocket if you need to be able to revisit them.
Yeah, to answer the question, I actually think the Packers are going to end up with 11 picks, but I don't think Brian Gutekunst is just going to sit and pick at every spot. I agree with what you said and the way Gutekunst does view those second and third round picks, but it wasn't that long ago we saw him take 2 second rounders and move up to get Christian Watson.
Yep.
He's made moves like that before. I think he's going to end up with 11 picks, but it's going to be a mix and match of a trade up here, a trade down there, and he's ultimately going to end up with a draft class of 11, but he's not just going to sit and pick at all 11 spots.
Most fascinating thing about last year's draft, Mike, they traded back twice in the second round. You and I, we were scrambling. They did not trade again the rest of that draft.
Yeah,
you kind of forget.
That's right.
Once they got to the third round, they just picked where they were
then
rest
they
of the
picked
way.
Where they were sitting, yeah. Next question for you, Weston. In the first round, the Packers currently own the number 25 overall pick. Trade up, trade down, or sit and pick at 25? What do you think Mr. Gutekunst is going to do?
See, here's what's funny, because I just got done talking about, I don't know how much they're going to trade. I don't know where they're... I think the one thing I've seen with Brian is if there is a guy that he likes in the first round, he's going to go get that player.
Yep.
So this answer is contingent on whether or not that player is available or that player falls. But if you're asking me to put down my just play money chips on a move here, I would say they actually do trade up. I wonder, because when I've been doing these mock draft simulators, and who's to say who the Packers are really truly interested in, but there always ends up being one guy that falls. I just did another one just now in Leatu Latu. Is actually the guy that, and this for the first time popped up, is available at 25. I feel like that's, whether it's one of these offensive linemen, whether it is a Cooper DeJean, whether it is one of these cornerbacks, or whether it is maybe like one of the top edge rushers or a Byron Murphy II. If somebody like that is coming into your orbit, is that where you go and make a play? I don't think they move up 12 spots to get a player. It's going to take way too much equity.
Yeah.
But I could see you trying to leapfrog somebody if there's a player available that they covet.
Yeah, for me, I'll just start by saying I have no idea what Brian is going to do.
That's a lie.
And but I could see any one of the three possibilities happening. You know, I think any of them are on the table. I think it's going to depend on what the board looks like, how it unfolds. I would say after the first 15 to 16 picks, then what does it look like? Because I agree with you. If he trades up, I don't think it's going to be a massive jump, like, you know, of 15 or 16 spots or something like that. But I could see a jump of, you know, 7 or 8 spots, for example, something like that. I could also see him trading back. I could see him sitting and picking. This is what I've decided, for those who want my opinion. This is how I see it. If Brian Gutekunst is trading up, I think he's trading up for either a corner or a defensive lineman. You're talking about DeJean, Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, or defensive lineman like Byron Murphy or like Johnny Newton from Illinois, something like that. If he's trading back, I think it's because he's got his eye on one of those off-the-ball linebackers like an Edgerrin Cooper, maybe a Peyton Wilson. But he doesn't think he needs to use the 25th pick to get that guy. But he can't wait until 41 to get him. He feels like if he wants that guy, he's going to have to get him somewhere in between there. But he'll trade back and get some more draft assets for later on. If he's going to sit and pick, he's going to take an offensive lineman because I think there are going to be choices at offensive line at pick 25 because the top of this draft appears to be so deep at offensive line, at least compared to some other years.
Did you read what I wrote in Inbox about Graham Barton and Amarius Mims?
Yeah.
What did you think? Okay, I'll let people in on this. I can't do things out of topic. I have to actually explain it on the show. Basically, the point I made, because somebody said, well, if you have an elite tackle or an elite prospect at interior lineman, how do you view them? Me personally, when you take somebody like Barton, who is a college left tackle, who has been the best offensive lineman for Duke for a number of years now, but is projected to be inside, I actually view them the same. Because the way I look at it, again, if you're not at Alabama, if you're not at Georgia, if you're not at one of these power national championship contender programs, I want you to be the best offensive lineman on your team.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you have to play left tackle, but I want you to be the best offensive lineman. Barton is absolutely that. What I'm curious about is that so many times we've heard these pre-draft pundits project a player at a certain position, and that does not end up being the case. David Bakhtiari, a 5-time All-Pro left tackle, was supposed to play center in the National Football League. He wasn't big enough, is what people said. And then there he is.
Or a guard. Yeah.
But it's those type of moves that I look at where when you see Zach Tom do what he did or Elton Jenkins do what he did, I just think you got to get bodies in there. Now, the thing I don't know is when you are 6'8" and you are 340 pounds and you run a 5'40" like Amarius Mims, but you only have this limited workload, I don't know how Brian Gutekunst judges that.
Yeah, that's kind of the big mystery.
But isn't that what's interesting about this? You have a guy like Barton who has this huge workload and all this tape and what Duke was able to accomplish the last few years, a team that has not historically had a ton of success.
Right.
He's so credentialed. I think everybody agrees he's going to be a starter for years in the NFL. Just where is it going to come at? Whereas Mims is this raw, high ceiling prospect that you might need some time to develop.
Yeah.
It's a tough pickle.
Yeah. Mims to me is a classic Brian Gutekunst Green Bay Packers offensive lineman pick because they would be like, yes, only 8 starts in college, but they see all the traits, they see the upside. They're like, this guy, maybe he needs a little bit of time, but then, you know, he can be the next Brian Bulaga and play one of the tackle spots for 10 years and you never worry about him, right? Like I think they would potentially view him that way. But of course, I don't know. Maybe they see a lot more flaws on tape.
Maybe.
And he's not as high on their board as maybe he is on other teams' board.
You know what I love about it, though? Then this is why I'm so intrigued by the idea of an offensive lineman in the first round, even though I know fans, it isn't the sexiest pick.
Right.
It's the fact that you look at what Rasheed Walker did as a 7th rounder. You look at what Yosh Nijman did as an undrafted
guy. Yep.
When you take somebody that has so many tools and you put them into this program with what Adam Stenovich, Luke Butkus, what they've been able to develop with offensive linemen, I just think that's really intriguing because it's been a minute now since the Packers have actually had a first round pick that they chose in that offensive line room.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to take care of a little bit of sponsor business here, and then we're going to keep going because I've got more questions for you. Today's show is going to be a little bit longer, Justin, our producer, sorry, a little longer than usual. But we're only doing one show this week.
Yep.
Because with the draft on Thursday, we will wait until the following Tuesday.
Justin, I hope your mom's lunch is still in the refrigerator, not at your desk, because it's going to get warm.
Well, SiriusXM NFL Radio delivers hard-hitting analysis and up-to-the-minute NFL news that true football fanatics need 24/7, 365. And at Cousin Subs, we have something for everyone, like our Wisconsin cheese curds, mac and cheese, golden fries, and creamy shakes, all paired with your favorite sub or sub in a bowl. Cousin Subs, 50 years of better. All right, not so much talking about the first round now, but as far as perhaps later in the draft, a couple questions throw at you. The first one is, Brian Gutekunst has shown no hesitation whatsoever in stocking a position, doubling up, maybe even tripling up at a position when the depth on the roster calls for that. Do you see him doing that in this draft? And if so, at what position or positions might the Packers come away with multiple selections?
Okay, so hear me out on this, because I understand the Packers have a need at cornerback. So it's not like I'm saying, oh, what a epiphany that Wes is having here. But I thought last year showed that you can never get comfortable at a position.
Absolutely.
Jair Alexander, Eric Stokes, Keyshawn Nixon, Rasul Douglas. How many times did we say last year, Mike? And I know that Stokes was coming back, but how many times did we talk about, man, where are they going to put all these guys?
Yeah.
They never once had to deal with that during the season. They maybe for a week, just because of how injuries affected that position. And then as soon as it looks like Stokes is going to be back, Ja is back, and then Stokes is out, and then Rasul is traded, and this domino effect that never stopped.
Right.
Last year, taking Carrington Valentine in the seventh round, when they didn't necessarily need a cornerback, when Brian always talks about, you know, we're not just going to take players just because there's a need there. We want to have competition. I thought Valentine was the best example of a guy that, even though it was a stacked position, came in and earned his reps with the number ones in training camp.
Absolutely.
So I could see them easily taking a cornerback high and then going back at it, whether it be in the fourth round, the fifth round, day three at some point. I just think there's enough value there, especially with the interior, with a slot position as either the nickel or the dime. I just think you have to have options there. Safety, I'm sure they're going to take one. I love this draft class for a second round Nick Collins type safety. If it's there, I don't know if there's necessarily a first-round pick there, but I think there's definitely a second-round one.
Sure.
I just feel like that's what has to happen. I could absolutely see them taking another receiver, but the only thing about that is I look at receiver a lot like cornerbacks. I'm not saying you need to get it to where Mike McCarthy had it, where it's, okay, it's Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Devontae Adams, and nobody else gets on the field. But I want to see more Dontavian Wicks next year. I want to see him on the field. I want to see Jaden Reed. I hope that Christian Watson's healthy and Romeo Doubs out there. You have a Bo Melton. You have so many guys to incorporate already that I feel like when you talk about competition and having competition, the Packers have competition there.
Yeah.
With how they've invested in that position the last 2 years,
yep,
the competition is there. Next year, if things are going well for Romeo or things are going well for Watson and those guys are potentially coming up on contracts and you want to deepen it out again, I felt like that was one area where the Packers kind of came up short during Devontae Adams, you know, progress into an all-pro, is they weren't drafting receivers at that time consistently.
Yeah.
Then you can dip in. But for me, I look at being able to give Jeff Hafley, a secondary coach, giving him more options on the back end.
I see potentially various spots where Gutekunst could be doubling up in this draft. I definitely think in the secondary, and you know, when you're talking about a guy like DeJean who could play corner, could play safety, but I could see multiple corners. I could see multiple safeties being drafted. The spots that actually jump out to me as possible double ups, though, I think Gutekunst is going to take multiple off ball linebackers, because there is a little bit of a shortage there with how Jeff Hafley's going to play this defense. And then I think offensive linemen. Not saying specific positions, but I think he's going to come away with multiple offensive linemen in this draft because, what was it? You had the stat. Excuse me, my voice is giving out on me.
I can say it. I can say the stat right now if you want to clear your voice.
Yeah.
Since 1936, the first time that everybody congregated down at, what was it, the Pfister down in Milwaukee, the first draft they ever had, back-to-back drafts, the Packers have never had two in a row without taking an offensive lineman.
You're right.
That's and I think that's an important thing to remember, because last year they had all those draft picks, 13 picks. They did not actually take an offensive lineman.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing, actually.
And it made sense. Everybody came back. Literally everybody was back. They had like 15 guys with like NFL experience. But that's not the case now. You have to be able to deepen that reservoir.
Yeah. Another one for you. Brian Gutekunst mentioned at the scouting combine in Indianapolis, and I believe he reinforced it at the owners' meetings in Orlando. He's talked about trying to get back into the game of drafting quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Do you think he does that?
I do.
And when do you think perhaps he turns in that card for a quarterback?
Sixth round.
Okay.
I brought up the Matt Hasselbeck thing again in inbox on Tuesday because somebody was asking, you know, Sean Clifford looked great last year, but what's his ideal, like what's the ideal course for him without Jordan Love getting hurt? And I said, it's making the most out of every single opportunity you make, get as small as it may be. And it might be a 37-yard pass in a meaningless game to Bo Melton. But it is showing that you have that command and being able to develop. I love what Brian said about getting back in the development of quarterback, that
yep.
game. Because, Mike, one of the things I said over and over and over again, and I could see you getting blue in the face, you were tired of hearing it because it just got so redundant. But the draft pick of Jordan Love was an investment in 2020.
Yep.
Everybody looks at this as, okay, you spent the pick. They didn't need a quarterback. No, but they did. And even if Aaron Rodgers would have played till 50, that was an investment that you could potentially, that was a savings bond that you could eventually cash back in because of how important the quarterback position is in the National Football League.
Yep.
That's what I want to see them get back to, especially in these drafts where you have double-digit picks. Everything is going to be a crapshoot. Yes, you might find a Carl Bradford or a Rashid Walker or a Carrington Valentine, but sometimes you don't. And if you think there's a quarterback there with some intangible, some attribute that you really want to take a deeper look at,
yeah.
absolutely bring them in. Because as we learned a couple weeks ago at the NFL owners meetings, the emergency quarterback is back, baby. Doesn't matter if they're on the 53-man roster or not. You have that option now to bring him up as like this 49th man. Of course, your other two quarterbacks can no longer play in the game. There's more value there with the third quarterback than there was last season. So I feel like it's something that I would definitely move forward with if you have that opportunity.
Yeah, I think he takes a quarterback as well. I would say anywhere from the fifth round or later. I don't see it happening in the fourth round or sooner.
Because then you're locking yourself into a roster spot.
Yeah, but I think fifth round or later, I could definitely see another quarterback.
I would love to know.
Heck, if he can find another Sean Clifford in the fifth round, man, you don't hesitate there. You take that guy.
Absolutely, because Sean earned that roster spot last year. It wasn't that he just was a fifth round pick and he's locked in. No, he played better than everybody in that area. But the thing I really like that I think could be really valuable for them is if you are taking it in that later day three section, now you have a guy that can earn that spot. I would love to see the last time a fourth-round pick at quarterback ended up getting cut in that training camp. No, you're kind of locked into them being on the roster. There's too much investment there at too big of a position.
Yeah.
So I'd be very interested to see how that plays out.
All right. A couple more questions for you. Back into sort of some first-round discussion here, and this is not necessarily pertaining to the Packers, but I want to get your thoughts on a couple things. Where does the first trade happen in this draft?
Four.
Okay, so you think former Packers personnel executive Elliot Wolf, who's now running the Patriots draft and who has the number 3 overall pick, you don't think he's trading that pick to the Vikings?
I love Elliot. He knows a lot more about football than I do. I think you got to take a quarterback. I'm not saying you have to, but I'm saying you have to. The Patriots have been through a lot the last 3 years.
Yeah, they have.
And to have a guy in Mac Jones that was a runner-up for Offensive Rookie of the Year, it gets you to the playoffs, and have that castle crumble the way it did, I think you need somebody that's going to be able to give you a boost. And I feel like you need somebody that's going to be able to reinvigorate that fan base. It starts with the quarterback. Now, if Robert Kraft and that establishment has told him, hey, Elliot, you got 5 years to work with here. If you don't like any of these quarterbacks, we'll try it again next year. But the fact of the matter is, Mike, I think 5 of these quarterbacks are going to go in the top 15. I think 4 of them are going to go in the top 10. I just feel like if you're the Patriots, you have to make that move. Now,
So you think it's the Cardinals at number 4 are going to make the first trade?
Unless they feel like Marvin Harrison Jr.
Right. That's the wild card here. Do they feel like they should pair Kyler Murray with Marvin Harrison Jr. and use that 4 pick there, because then the Chargers at 5, the Chargers are trading out of that spot.
Yep.
Somebody's going to trade up to 5 and get their quarterback, and the Chargers are going to move back and get more draft.
Because here's the thing. Let's say this is the way I think about it. I think Elliott takes the quarterback, whether that's Daniels, whether that's Drake, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I feel like somebody panics then for the 4th one. I feel like somebody sells the farm to get that 4th quarterback.
And it's going to be an offer the Cardinals can't refuse. That's
all right. You have a master's degree.
Yep. I'm
very. Cardinals don't do it. The Chargers are going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Exactly. That's exactly the thing, and that's where the. I think you and I both agree, because my last question here, I was going to throw at you, the first non-quarterback to be picked, Marvin Harrison Jr. Do we both agree on that? It has to be, right?
Because if there weren't all these quarterbacks, he'd be the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
I've said this to Justin, actually, our producer. I said this a couple weeks ago, I believe, to him. Don't overthink it with Marvin Harrison Jr.
Right.
Again, I don't know how his career is going to play out, but he is the Andrew Luck of the receiver position. This guy has been billed as a number one overall pick for 2 years at Ohio State. It just so happens that quarterback is in a position you have to draft.
This is the first time, and I don't follow. I admit I don't follow this the all the non-Packer draft stuff as much as a lot of other people do. But this is the first time I can remember a receiver being talked about, you know, being taken in the first like five or six picks that. I'm as sold on him as a lot of the draft nicks are since Julio Jones, when the Falcons traded up to the number six spot and took Julio Jones, and they didn't look back. And a lot of people criticized them for it because of what they gave up to take a wide receiver. But, man, did that one work out for them. And to me, Marvin Harrison Jr. feels like the next Julio Jones in that draft scenario. Obviously, they're different types of players.
And you were the one that pointed out all the misses there have been with receivers over the last 15, 20 years.
It's an ugly list.
But,
bro.
Michael, the guys that are the legitimate prospects, the guys that everybody is hitching their wagons to, you don't get those guys in the third or fourth round. You don't find Megatron that late. You don't find Julio Jones that late. If Marvin Harrison is the next one of that kind...
Right. Right.
You have to take it.
You have to take
it. And maybe the Cardinals will. But I'm just saying, like, it's one of those things where I feel like once those first three quarterbacks are on the board, it's like your fantasy draft.
Yeah.
People are going to be like, oh, crap, I got to get this somebody. Yeah. I got to get my running back before I don't have one.
Yeah. Well, if it does play out that way, it's going to be fascinating to see if the Patriots, if Elliot Wolf sits at three and picks and takes the third quarterback off the board, then what would the Cardinals potentially have to get in order to give up the opportunity to take Marvin Harrison Jr.? That I think becomes the fascinating question here. All right, we've gone overtime today, but there is one other thing we need to touch on, because you and I have talked about this, that
the construction at Lambeau Field.
As much as there are these off-season mileposts like the combine and the owners' meetings and everything, it always feels to me like the draft is when you really turn the page to the next season. So that is here. The next season, 2024, truly is upon us in the NFL. And you and I are both a little sad because we're going to be here in Green Bay at 1265 Lombardi without one of our favorite people in this building that we've gotten to know over the years, because longtime equipment manager Red Batty has announced his retirement. He stopped in and visited us in our makeshift office down here in the bowels of Lambeau Field last week to sort of say a final goodbye. It won't be a final goodbye. We're going to see Red and all that. But Red Batty isn't going to be here on a daily basis anymore, and that, I think, makes us all sad. But congratulations to Red. I tip my hat to that man. He is as interesting, as genuine, as enjoyable a human being as I've ever been around, and we're sad to see him go.
Nobody that has worked in this building, I would say, since the renovation, earlier than that, personifies the ideals of the Green Bay Packers more than Gordon Red Batty. And I'll tell you this, Michael. It just so happens that on Thursday, it's my eight-year anniversary with the Green Bay Packers. You've had to deal with me for that long. I think every single one of those gray hairs up there has been a byproduct of you editing my content. But nobody made me feel more welcomed in this building in 2016 than Red. T-Bone Tom Bakken is just a little hair behind him, but
yep.
That equipment staff, they are salt of the earth people. Yep. There's a reason why I've said over and over again that equipment story, the travel essay story that I did last year, was one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had as a writer, because I was documenting people that I legitimately consider friends. and the hard work that they put in to keep this thing going. There's so much that happens behind the scenes, happens on the sideline that you do not see as Packer fans. Red is the guy that made a lot of that stuff happen. And he mentioned to us 65 and 50. That's what he was looking at, 65 years, 50 years in equipment. And then he decided to hang it up. So he's going to have a well-deserved and well-earned retirement. But there are so many stories, so many memories that he leaves me with. And I only had the 8 years working with him as a coworker. I can only imagine what other people's stories are like. But to Red, I say thank you, and I appreciate everything he did to make me feel like I was a legitimate part of this thing.
Yeah, I enjoyed I've been here for 18 seasons now, going into my 19th, and I enjoyed every single one of them with Red. Anytime you walk past him in the hallway, you stop and you listen to a Red Batty story, because maybe it's only 10 seconds long, but it's going to put a smile on your face for the rest of the day, because that guy, he's got stories and he knows how to tell them.
And I hope
he never loses that.
No, he won't.
In his human touch with other people.
10 seconds, usually more like 10 minutes, but if it's 10 seconds, still equally as good.
Absolutely. Well, with that, we will call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team and all of our coverage through the 3 days coming up here of the NFL draft. We will have the bulletin stories when the picks are made. We will have profile stories digging into the picks even further. We will have the larger analysis. We'll have instant reaction videos, three things videos. There will be photo galleries, highlight videos of the players the Packers select. Everything is going to be out there for you on Packers.com. Be sure not to miss it. For Wes, I am Mike. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. We will see you next time.